Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by my good friend, Miss Nadia Cater. Nadia, how are you?
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
How are things with you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yes, right. We're recording in January. It's a new year, new possibilities. I'm excited. What about you? You excited?
Yeah. I'm not a... I don't do resolutions anymore like I did when I was younger. But I do get into the mindset of like beginnings. Let's start some new things. Let's, you know, maybe some positive affirmations. I don't know. I'm on my path, you know, I'm on my path, always trying to be healthier.
Right.
I'm trying to be better, more wellness.
More wellness. Yeah, I guess I should be looking towards those things. I was like, you know what? I'm tired. I'm not going to think about resolutions. I don't care about those. I do want to actually go to the theater. I think I went to the theater like twice last year. And
yeah,
a big part of that was because I didn't care about anything that was coming out. But I'm looking forward to the new Barbie movie.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's about. And every time I see like a clip from it or like pictures, I'm like, this looks bizarre.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's so poppy and bright.
Right.
And I'm like, you know what? That's a good kind of poppy and bright sort of attitude to have for 2023. May things be bright pink and happy and Barbie pretty.
I trust Greta Gerwig. And I really liked her version of Little Women.
You know, I didn't see Little Women. I wanted to. And this is a few things I saw with Greta Gerwig. She's a really strong, like, performer, director, screenwriter. So, I mean, I have expectations. It's just, when it was first announced, it's like Greta Gerwig and live-action Barbie movie. That just, like, did not compute to me.
Right.
But I'm like, okay, so she's probably going to take this and either elevate it, or it's going to be a movie we all forget about in 6 months.
I think it's definitely, just from the trailer being a 2001 Space Odyssey parody, I think it's definitely like parodic, you know what I mean? Like it's not going to be sincere in whatever it's trying to do. And I guess we'll have to see how annoying that is. Will the joke sustain itself for 2 hours, or will 40 minutes into it, you'd be like, I've had enough. I get it. Pink. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the height of that's like the Brady Bunch movie, right?
Oh, that was exactly what I was thinking of. Like, it kind of makes me think about the Brady Bunch movie.
They did it perfectly because it's not annoying to the point of like, okay, I get it. But it took the only route that you can really take was you have to make fun of the property that you're talking about. I mean, you can't take it seriously, you know?
Who can take Ryan Gosling and neon rollerblades seriously?
Yeah, yeah. So you know, there's still a lot to be said. Like, we don't know what the plot is even, you know what I mean?
That makes it more intriguing because we don't know anything about it. Just that it exists, Ryan Gosling's in it, and Margot Robbie, they're both pretty, well, I care more about Margot Robbie. I think she's way more interesting. But they're both, you know, pretty strong performers.
I mean, so, she's the perfect casting for it, right? I mean, it's the best casting ever. Of course it's Margot Robbie. Who else could it be? It could have been Michelle Pfeiffer in like 1985 or something. But right now it's Margot Robbie.
That's true. Yeah. Anyway, so like I hope, you know, I have hopes for this year, no resolutions. I hope things are happy and bright and
I
not
hope
a disaster.
So far, it's been a good media year. I liked Megan. I saw Megan.
Oh, I want to see that. What, tell me about it.
It's very funny, but it's also scary. It's a really good horror comedy. It gets what it needs to be, but does that very well. It's really better than I actually thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be kind of trashy fun, and it ended up being like aware of itself and why it's fun and how stupid the concept is, but still you can make it scary and funny.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm looking forward to the Mario movie. You know, I've waited my whole life for a movie like that. I hope that it's good, you know, but yeah, that's basically, there's other things coming out this year. The new Evil Dead movie. I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. Oh, fingers crossed.
Yeah. So today, though, we are talking about Paprika from 2006. This is a return to the conversation that you and I began when we talked about Perfect Blue, another anime film directed by the same director as this film, Satoshi Kon. You actually talked a little bit about this in that episode. If you haven't heard the Perfect Blue episode, it's up on our feed. Listen to it. It's a good companion piece to this. And I think there are themes in both that relate to one another, or themes that are just themes that are coming through that artist's mind. He passed away very young. He passed away of pancreatic cancer, which is a really rough thing because by the time you know you have it, you usually don't have a lot of time and there's really nothing you can do about it. It's one of the shittiest cancers you can get. So is this his last movie or one of his last movies?
So this was his last feature film. We talked about Perfect Blue, which is his first feature film, and then this is his last one. So we're kind of like bookending here.
Yeah, and I don't know, do you have an Alamo Drafthouse where you are?
No, I don't.
This month they're doing all movies about movies, and they're showing Millennium Actress.
Oh, I love that movie.
So I haven't seen it yet, but I'm going to see it on the screen, so I'm excited to see it.
That's fantastic. If you have that opportunity by you, yeah. Definitely.
I have an Alamo like 4 minutes from me in Staten Island now, and I absolutely love it.
You know, I do miss the Alamo Draft House.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I actually think, we're already off topic, but I think there should be more theaters like that because, you know, if you want to get people going back to the movies, right? The way that people consume media now is very different because of streaming. Make it like, you know, have a nice combination of new releases and repertory. You know, like sometimes I go to these repertory screenings. I went to Lord of the Rings the other day. It was packed. I went to see Elf around Christmas. It was packed. I went to see Goodfellas. Now, this is Staten Island, New York, where there's a lot of Italian Americans. So, you know, that was packed.
Oh, wow. Seeing Goodfellas on the big screen. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. So, you know, if they want the theater experience to survive, I think do more repertory. Why not? It's easy as sin. I mean, it's just streaming. I mean, you don't have to send the reels physically anymore. You just stream it like you stream anything else. It streams right to the projector.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. It has to be something that it's not the same experience as sitting at home. So maybe somewhere you have alcohol so you can drink a cocktail, have dinner. Make it like a whole thing. I haven't been to the I haven't been back home to Staten Island in a couple years now. I have to make a trip, but I haven't been to the Staten Island Alamo Draft House. So does it have like a bar and stuff like the one in Brooklyn does?
Yeah, it is part owned by Staten Island's own RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan. So the bar is themed to the Wu-Tang Clan and the classic martial arts film, The Flying Guillotine.
Oh, cool.
And martial art, you know, every Alamo has a theme. Martial arts movies is the theme of this Alamo. So, like, all of the posters are martial arts movies. It's very cool. It's very cool.
That's awesome. let's get back. Yeah, let's get back to Paprika.
All right, so this movie's wild. Okay, you suggested this movie, and I was like, all right, great. And usually when, you know, when we do an episode, I either know it or I trust the person who suggests it. I trust whatever my co-host's interest is. So I watched it, you know, usually watch something like, if I haven't seen it before, I'll watch it two times at least. One to just watch it, and then one to watch it and take notes. I watched this, I think, 4 times
Oh, shit.
In the last week. It is mind-bending. And I kind of, I was talking to you about how much I don't fucking understand it. And you were saying, because you and I did an episode on the stop-motion movie Alice.
Uh-huh.
You were saying, like, well, it's not weirder than Alice, which is true. But I realized what makes it so hard to grasp is it has some rules. Like, when a movie's completely bonkers, you kind of just give up on a plot, right? You go, okay, this movie is just representational. This is just art. I don't need to worry about a story. But this movie has rules, and it has a story, and it has a plot, yet it breaks them and ignores things, which makes it more confusing. Because it's like, have rules, or be like a David Lynch movie and have no rules, or have rules and abide by them.
Yeah.
So that's what made it confusing for me. But I watched it once in the original Japanese audio, and then I watched it 3 times with English audio. Because I feel like, okay, now I could really just pay attention more to what the hell's going on. Especially because there's a lot of gibberish in the dreams. There's a lot of gibberish talk. And reading that on a subtitle, you're kind of like, am I reading this right? Is this badly translated? What the hell is happening? So
it really, you know, Satoshi Kon kind of did this a little in Perfect Blue, like over time, you don't know what's real and what's not.
Yeah.
And in this movie, I feel like he kind of turned that up a notch where it's so seamless. Yeah. You don't even know you're in a dream until someone starts talking nonsense, and then you're like, oh fuck.
Right.
It's almost like I was thinking of it in a weird, like, kind of Freddy Krueger way, where it's like you're in a dream, but you're not quite sure what's going on, and then Freddy comes, and then you know that you're dead, right? But right, like this right. one, it's like, oh, you know it, and you could die.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, so it was just it really is a like really challenging.
It is challenging. But yeah. Also fun. I mean, I don't think you need to understand it to enjoy it. It kind of just, you know, it's dazzling looking. It's very beautiful looking. So I should say, okay, so it's directed by Satoshi Kon, it's written by Satoshi Kon and Shishi Minakami, and it's based on a novel by Yatsutaka Tsuyoshi. Let's just go through the plot as much as we can, and we don't have to like get too close to it, but it's also like following a thread is probably the best way through it. It's actually a very tight movie. It's only 90 minutes. It doesn't have a lot of fat on it either. It's confusing, but it doesn't meander in any way.
No. And you know what I was thinking about while I was watching it is that this movie does have exposition in it. Like they tell you why something is the way or what's going to happen, but it happens so fast that you really have to kind of be prepared for that. So I watched this movie a couple of times. So when you text me and said, like, you know, I think I have to watch this like multiple times to understand it, at first I was like, I don't remember not understanding, but I've also watched it more than Mike has. And I had a lot of time to process because it's been years. So it's like, I used to watch it like, I think I watched it like 3 or 4 times, but like over the course of years. But basically, yeah, just for audience sake, like it's a gorgeous film, but it's also just something to keep in mind that if you want to like dissect it and break it down, you definitely have to like be prepared to watch it more than once.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's a good ride. So why don't we just exactly what you said? Let's just start with a thread, right?
Yeah.
So do you want to get started?
Yeah, its opening image is a small little clown car driving onto the screen, and a clown gets out of it and says, in Japanese, it says, it's the greatest showtime, but says it in English. That's so the original Japanese begins with English language. But when it's translated into English, they don't say it's the greatest showtime. They just say it's showtime. We are with the character Detective Toshimi. We're in his dream. We're in like a circus. He looks like he's like patrolling. He's like looking for something in the crowd. A little girl wearing a clown mask who's on her father's shoulder. The clown mask starts speaking to him. Like, And you get the feeling it's like almost like an action movie or like some sort of a crime drama, the way they're
Right.
talking.
Yeah, it's almost like he's a cop, like he's an undercover cop.
Yeah, at the circus for some reason. And the dream goes on. A mystery person that he doesn't really know is like on the stage, and he makes everyone in the audience look at the detective, and a spotlight goes on him. And then the detective, like magic, appears inside a cage. All these people from the audience start rushing at the detective, and they all have his face. He falls through the bottom of the cage, and now he's like in Tarzan, and he's on a vine holding a woman. And then he's like on a train being strangled, like some sort of film noir detective story. And then he's in some like fair. It's just like it just keeps changing. And
Oh, yeah.
finally, he's in like this corridor with like this red carpet. And from behind, he sees in slow motion like somebody being shot and falling. And then he wakes up and he's laying in bed and he's next to Paprika and he has a thing on his head. And we sort of begin to understand what's happening, which is in this world, there is this invention called the DC Mini, which is used for therapy, or it's invented for therapy. And you put it on, and your therapist puts it on, and you fall asleep, and the therapist can enter your dream and also record your dream like a movie. And the idea is through that, the therapist can get an idea of like what you're repressing or what's going on in your mind, in your subconscious. And that will help you get through depression or any kind of illness. But right off the bat, the movie starts equating dreams and media. And that becomes something that is consistent throughout. They're rewatching the dream that we just watched on like a laptop. And the detective's like, oh, it's so weird. I'm Tarzan, I'm this and that. And she's like, well, it's because you're not in REM sleep. When you're in REM sleep, the dreams are longer, so they're more like mainstream feature films. But when you're falling asleep in the beginning, it's more like short little art films.
That was so interesting of like immediately bringing it up.
Yeah.
Also that all his dreams are all like Western movies. Like, well,
Yeah.
the circus was very kind of like Ringling Brothers
Yeah.
American kind of circus. And then it's like the Tarzan is like the Johnny Weissmuller kind of
Yes.
Tarzan. And then of course the strangling on the train could have been just a crime film.
Right. They're all genre. They're all generic. And you're right, like more American genre, Hollywood genre.
Hollywood, that's the word.
Right. So they're in a hotel room doing this. And Paprika's like leaves and he's like, when will I see you again? And it almost feels like it's sex work, the way that it's set up, because he's obviously very enamored with her. They were just on the bed. They're doing this in secret. But I guess we'll get to it, but this is the first kind of like question of, okay, what are your rules? Because he's talking to Paprika in the real world, but we find out momentarily that Paprika and the protagonist Chibi, Dr. Chibi, are the same person. And when they're in the real world, they're Dr. Chibi, but the dream persona is Paprika. So when you watch it a second time, it kind of makes sense, but then you're like, wait, how is Paprika just out in the real world and him talking to her?
That's a good point.
But then we have the opening sequence, which is like a pretty wild opening credits.
I have to say the opening credits is so weird. I've never seen opening credits like this because it
Yeah.
kind of just jumps into like it's clearly a credit sequence, right? And it's just Paprika. It's not with none of the other characters are in it, even though they are integral to the plot of this movie.
Right.
But the credits are like, no, this is about Paprika. The title is Paprika.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like Paprika is on like a motorcycle, but then you see like a cityscape and all the credits are kind of like projected on the screen. And she's just like kind of jumping through. And it's just Paprika interacting with people,
And
which
various
again,
media, you know, like you'll see a billboard and she'll be in the advertisement and then walk into another billboard and then you see a guy, like, I guess, working at his desk, like a salary man, like, tired at his desk. And she's on the monitor and she steps out of the monitor. She keeps going in and out of media. Like, she's on her scooter, but then next to the scooter, you see a truck with an image of like a girl on a rocket. And then she's the girl on the rocket. And then she flies off the truck. Like, the shot that like a lot of people reference is like this crazy shot where she's like walking out of a restaurant. And then some kid wearing a t-shirt walks by her and she disappears. Like he kind of like wipes her away, but then she's in his t-shirt and she was always in his t-shirt. And then she steps out of his t-shirt and it's all very upbeat. I mean, it's all like super, super poppy and upbeat. And it's like Paprika. And she's like, very like, she's similar to the pop idol per Mima's pop idol persona in Perfect Blue. She's like kind of like anime girl. She's male gazey, kind of like I'm pretty and quirky and brightly colored kind of character.
Yeah, I was actually gonna pause it too when we get into it later. It's like Paprika is really like the Manic Pixie Dream Girl,
Yes,
but she's also,
absolutely.
yeah, but she's also the lead, which is unusual.
Right. But she's like half of the lead, 'cause Chiba is very kind of like dour and has like a sourpuss and like wears very muted colors. Chiba's very different from Paprika.
Right. And you see that, and sort of like in the credits after she kind of like gets out of that guy's t-shirt, which is just so bizarre. It's just kind of cuts to like a woman in a Paprika in a car, but then it's changing and she's changing from Paprika to Chiba, and then Chiba parks the car in this like car in this like multi-story car park, and then it ends, and then it cuts into like the real, like she's at work, and you're just like, so did this really happen?
Right,
Or
exactly.
which I think Satoshi Kon, I think that he made his whole career on that. It's just like, are you, is what we're seeing really happening
Right.
or not? And you know what? He doesn't really give us answers. He gives us no answers, and we just talk, we just like kind of
No.
sit with it.
And he never gives us an answer to like one of the fundamental questions, which is why is it that everyone else, when they dream, they're themselves, but when Chiba dreams, she's Paprika. She's one, or I have a theory of one more, but she's basically the only character that has that dual persona in and out of the dream world.
Yeah, but
Never explained
also,
why. And people know Paprika. People refer to Paprika. Paprika is called a terrorist. Like so, if somebody she and she gets resentful of Paprika. Like if somebody says talks to her like she's Paprika, she's like, I'll tell Paprika if I see her. Like she's mad at you for talking to her like she's Paprika. It's very odd.
well, it's like people, and it's the movie. The characters and the movie itself treats Paprika as a separate entity,
Yes.
right? Like it's not even that people are confusing them for each other or not. They just say maybe this is a job for Paprika. It's almost like
Yeah. Superman.
that, yeah, exactly. It's almost like when someone's talking to Clark Kent, it's like, oh man, I hope Superman comes and saves the day or whatever,
Yeah.
right? It's very bizarre. But it's also like if everyone knows who Superman is, but still treats Clark Kent separately.
Right. Yeah.
And
So
we never really, there's no origin story either. So we don't know where Paprika came from.
no.
We don't know how she exists, or exactly what you said. How does she exist in the dream and the real world? But something changed at some point, but we never learn what that is.
Yeah, and it seems like people are in love with Paprika as well.
Well, she is like, if we go with the Manic Pixie Dream Girl thing, like she's the perfect woman.
Right.
She's cute, she's charming, she knows how to get what she wants. She's a little flirty.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and she really knows how to get dig into people and kind of, and part of her like quote unquote like therapy work is getting to what's their problem, right? And she kind of pulls that out of them in a
Yeah.
way that they don't expect.
Right. People seem to prefer her to Chiba.
Well, Chiba's real. Chiba has a job.
Right.
She got
Yeah.
bills to worry about. She has her science work. Paprika kind of just does whatever she wants.
Yeah. We should say that the film Inception takes a lot from this movie, not plot-wise, but visually. And a lot of its ideas, I think, are right out of this. Similar to the way Black Swan, the Darren Aronofsky film, took a lot from Perfect Blue. You watch this and you go, oh, that's Inception, but Inception is clearly after this.
Oh yeah, he definitely watched this movie.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. It was like, well, no one's really gonna know this. This is fine.
Oh, you know what? Let me say something, and I rarely do this, but because I wanted, I like to go into things fresh, but I really felt like I needed some discourse around this movie, so I looked at some stuff. So let me give you a little bibliography.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of YouTube essays. I watched a couple YouTube essays. I watched one called "Understanding Paprika" by a channel called Film Is Just Moving Pictures. I watched a good video essay called "Satoshi Kon: Editing Space and Time" by Every Frame of Painting. I watched "The Satoshi Kon Problem" by Steve M, and "Understanding Paprika" by Steve M. And then I read some things. Some of these things you sent me from Colossus. I read "Paprika: The Quick Explanation, End Plus Theme." A lot of these are blogs. "How Escapism Becomes Dangerous According to Paprika" by Nino Padilla. That one I found a little too simple. "The Two-Way Portal: Paprika as a Media for Visual Art," which was, oh, who did that one? That was another one of those, like blogs. Actually, it felt more like a an undergraduate or graduate school paper turned into a blog.
That might have been it, actually.
Little Paprika. Let me see. I want to make sure. Yeah, let me give. I want to. Written by Luke Malou, Maillux. So some of those ideas were very useful to me, and I'll be bouncing off some of those ideas. And you know, it's been over 10 years since I've been in grad school, but I still want to give credit to my sources. I don't steal ideas. So where the heck are we? Okay, so we're in the real world. We meet Dr. Tokita, sorry. He is the creative DC Mini. He's the scientist, and he's this big, obese man. When we first see him, he's stuck in an elevator door. And this brings us to something negative about Khan's films. And we were talking about this when we talked about Perfect Blue and the killer in that movie. Satoshi Kon often makes people who are overweight and disabled as being like morally corrupt or detestable. And it's the least it's I like him a lot, but it's a theme in all his work, which I don't know if he was aware of or not, but it's pretty not cool.
Yeah, I think it's like I don't know if it's because of his obsession with media in general. I don't know if it's a cultural thing that we just, as we're not Japanese, we can't pick up on.
Right.
But I took it as like because of his obsession with media and how media controls that, you know, really
Yeah.
does control what we see as like healthy, normal bodies or
Yes.
like put together people. And I think that kind of whether or not he intended that, that's really what happens is like, you know, fat people are incompetent or, you know, always or like, yeah, Dr. Takeda is like, there's a scene where he's just he orders like five entrees in one
Right.
sitting when he's sitting with the rest of the characters, and you're like, who? No one eats like this.
Yeah, I've been a fat person my whole life. I've never ordered five dinners.
Like, oh my God. Yeah, it's awful. I'm kind of glad that we're really move as a society in general, we're moving away from that.
Yeah, and I to give Khan some credit, he ends up not being the bad guy. He ends up, even though like it's a mystery, so you don't know who really is good or bad, but at the end, Tokita ends up being a good person, who ends up in a relationship with Chiba. So that's a step forward, I guess.
That the morbidly obese man gets the pretty girl. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. but no, actually, I mean, one thing we could say is, what he's criticizing is maybe not weight or body images, but he's making fun of anime fans. He's doing that self sort of like making fun of thing that you see a lot in good anime of like making fun of the anime fan. You know, he's fat, well, he doesn't have good social skills. He just cares about toys and gimmick and gizmos and things like that. That's one way to read it.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Because there's also a character that we don't really meet, but is important to the plot, Dr.
Himura.
Himuro, who also is obsessed with toys too.
Yes.
And they're like, they're considered, or Takeda considers him a friend and a colleague, where
Yes.
they just have this thing in common where they're really interested in toys
Yeah.
and that kind of, and though just having those in their, adult apartments with no children.
Yes. So we meet the rest of the team of the scientists who created DC Mini. We meet Chief, who is this, he's this tiny little man. He's an old man with glasses. He's sort of a typical anime archetype of like the elder in the group, you know?
The elder scientist,
Yeah.
yeah, with the big glasses, a bald
Yeah.
head.
And we meet the chairman, who is this sort of scary looking bald man who, again, ableism, he's in a wheelchair.
He also looks sickly. Like, they don't get into it really about
Yeah. Why?
about if he
Yeah.
has an illness or anything, but he really looks like that he's been through, he looks almost gray.
Right.
And he's totally bald. He has no hair. So it almost made me wonder if he had some sort of cancer or something. But they never talk about it. It's
Right.
just he just has this kind of demeanor of like wet blanket, just
Yeah.
kind of bitter
Right.
and
He's
angry.
always saying that he's always like, we shouldn't have made this. We're messing with reality. Whenever we see him, he's surrounded by plants and nature. So you get this idea that he cares about the real world and reality. Although, spoiler, he's the villain.
Yep, he's they call him the chairman. So he's
Yeah.
like the chairman of the board that controls kind of, I guess, money or how they move, because they work for like this
Right.
Foundation for Psychiatric Research.
Yeah. But he's the one who stole the DC Mini. He's the villain the whole way through. And even though he was talking a bunch of shit about reality, he does it because he wants to. It seems that one of the things he wants is to walk. Because he makes a deal with this other guy who ends up to be a villain. Well, another scientist that they work with. I forget his name.
Osanai,
Yeah.
who's
To,
young and virile and
right.
attractive.
Yeah, and he says, like, you give me your body and I'll give you what you want, which what he wants is Chiba. So yeah. So you're in this meeting, they're talking about what's happening. The DC Mini was stolen. We find out that they didn't put any restrictions on it. There's nothing in the machine that keeps you from like from keeps other people from being able to use it. It basically anyone can use it and jump into someone else's dreams or merge dreams together. It just basically like reality is really going to get screwed now. Because it's very like Baudrillard of like reality, like you know that whole like simulacra thing. Like if you make fake realities, then what is reality? Reality kind of gets lost in the way, and all of the order of things in nature is fucked up. While we're in the meeting, Chief starts to act crazy and starts talking crazy, and we find out that someone has gotten into his head and put him in the dream. Because whoever this person is, we find out it's the chairman, but it's set up like a mystery. Whoever the person is can like enter people's dreams even when they're awake, basically enter their subconscious. So out of nowhere, he just starts talking crazy and running around, then jumps out a window.
It's almost like someone had a stroke or something. Like he had a stroke because he
Yeah.
just starts talking, not like he just
Word
starts,
salad.
word salad and everyone's just so shocked they don't know how to deal with it. And then he
Yeah.
runs down the hallway and jumps out a window, which is so jarring.
Right. I wrote down some of his dialogue because I wanted to give the listener an example of how this stuff sounds. Anyone who's concerned about the expiration dates, step aside now. No one gets in the way of my glory train. They need to really analyze all the livers of the Triangle Goose Party. Ah, this whole festival was put together by 20 third graders with lots of chutzpah and one panda. You see, now I am truly grand, the ultimate one. A lot of the in the dreams, the dialogue is like that, just word salad, gobbledygook crazy.
It reminds me of when people started putting, like, they take AI, like an AI program,
yeah,
and just tell it to, like, come up with a story or a script, and it just spurts out pure nonsense. This is exactly what it feels like. But this is 2000. This was made in the early 2000s. This was before we even had that access to that technology.
And now, as you and I record this episode in 2022, that's sort of a hot topic, because now we see a lot of AI imagery, which real artists don't like. And there's a weird thing happening in the world of education where there are AI programs that can write term papers. So teachers are trying to figure out, how do we combat this? It's really kind of, it's wild.
Yeah, it's really, we're in a really weird place right now with AI. We're still trying to figure out, what does it mean, and what do we do with this? And seeing how people are manipulating it has been interesting.
Yeah.
So the chief does survive.
Right. He's in a coma. We see the dream parade for the first time.
That is just pure nightmare fuel.
Talk about it. I think it looks very cheerful.
I think what's spooky about it is it is cheerful. It's one of those scary things where it is cheerful, but it's also nonsense and menacing.
What does it look like?
That's the thing. It's just this dream parade of all these, like, items, and some of it's like a dancing fridge. There's a Statue of Liberty. There's, like,
dolls.
There's Buddhas, and there's a frog, like, parade. There's frogs that are human sized playing instruments, and there's all these, like, animals and weird people, and there's all these porcelain dolls everywhere. And the chief ends up, so, like, Paprika goes into this dream to save him or whatever, and he's, like, at the top of the he's in the parade,
right? They're holding him up like he's some king or something.
Yes, and he's still spouting nonsense.
Yeah,
and Paprika just climbs through the parade on top of the creepy dolls, and is just trying to interact with him. And it is it. I don't know. It's kind of like one of those things where, oh man, I'm trying to think of, like, a horror thing or horror imagery that's not dark and menacing, but is bright and menacing.
Midsommar has a lot of brightness.
Right, that, or even, like, or even I think of Tim Chucky. Curry's It. Chucky. Okay, yeah, Chucky.
He's like a little doll. He's like a toy, a colorful toy.
That's true. I was thinking of, like, Tim Curry in the miniseries It from 1990. Yes. Where he's like a bright clown. He doesn't look like a scary clown, but there's something about his affect that's really off. And then, of course, you know that he's the monster in that.
Right.
So, well, that's kind of how I took it.
Also, the parade is marching. So they're always moving, which is in its own sense menacing, because they're going somewhere. They have some kind of objective or end goal. And they're always playing the same music, this very percussive, like, upbeat music every time you see them. So every time you see the parade, it's really like, it's almost like an army invading. Like, later on, we're in the detective's dream, and they literally just bust in out of nowhere. And, like, it's like, and what we find out is that this parade, it began in the mind of what we're told was a severely disturbed patient. And whoever the terrorist was, again, I already revealed it was the chairman, took that dream and it let it invade all of everyone's dreams.
Yeah, it's almost like a disease. Like, it spreads like a virus or a virus, right? And it's like they kind of explain in the dialogue of the movie is that people who use the dehumanization, that means the researchers and the scientists, the more you use it, the more susceptible you are to that kind of terror attack.
Right.
So that includes Chiba, because she goes in as Paprika, the heavyset scientist, the chief. So basically anyone that works there can easily be susceptible to this.
Right.
This kind of delusion parade.
Right. When Paprika goes into the parade to try to save the chief... Now when she's in it, before she goes into it, they're watching it on the screen, because remember, you could watch the dreams on a screen, and they see one of the little dolls looks like Himuru, who's one of their, we never meet him, but he's one of their colleagues. And they immediately think, oh, he must be the terrorist. So they go to his house to investigate. And they find, like you said, there's toys everywhere. It's very weird and disturbing. And also a weird touch. I don't know how to read this. Tell me what you think. We see gay porn. And it's like, okay, Himuru's gay. But what does it mean to tell us that he's gay in this way where all I know about him now is he might be a terrorist and he's invading people's dreams and he loves dolls. And you're also now telling me that he's gay. So how am I reading this?
So I don't think it was meant to imply that he was any kind of pervert or pedophile or something. Because you notice when they cut to the gay porn, it's actually magazines on his shelf, and framed in it is Osanai looking at it and kind of just sighing and looking away.
Yeah.
Right? And later on, we find out why he does that. But I think it was really just kind of like a more of a hint of this. Just this is a multifaceted character.
Okay.
It could also be a misdirect. It could say like he's a pervert and that's why he's created this dream, right?
Right.
But that's not actually the case.
Right, because we find out later that he didn't create the dream.
Yeah, he's basically the red herring.
Yeah, right. He's innocent. He's just one of the people that gets sucked into it.
Yeah, we never meet him. They actually go to his apartment because he's been missing for a few days.
Right.
So, and they never find him.
Well, they eventually find his body and he's in a coma and they realize he's not, he wasn't the perpetrator. He's just another victim of it. Because remember she dreams about this carnival. And then that's weird because she's like, how did I step into a dream when I was awake? And that's when they realize that they all can do that because they've been working on it so much. But then they go to the carnival to investigate and he like falls from the sky. He like falls from a window or something. And you think he's dead, but then he's in a coma. And then you just see they're like monitoring his dreams. And it's like he's, out he wasn't the bad guy.
Well, actually before that,
yeah,
they kind of misdirected us again. So Himuru has this like patch in his apartment somehow. So they go down the hatch and it's in this weird hallway.
But is that real or wait, is that real or was that in a dream?
Well, that's the thing is like the hallway ends up being the carnival. But when Chiba goes to jump over the fence to get into the carnival, because it's like a waste side, like metal fence, she gets pulled back. And then it turns out it's not the carnival. Yeah. It's his balcony. So it's almost like, I don't know if that meant that someone was trying to get her killed or that was just some kind of, I don't know, dream miasma that was around.
But there was no real hatch then. I don't think so, because when she goes, one of the indicators of the dream world is blue butterflies. And when she goes down the hatch, she sees blue butterflies. I think the hatch wasn't there. There's also a weird moment before she goes down the hatch where Paprika appears to her and says something, almost like a devil on her shoulder. And she's like, all right, enough. I don't want, like, she kind of like shuts her up. And you're like, this is weird. Like, Paprika lives in her head.
Well, similar to Perfect Blue, it's like the character is in reflections, like a shiny surface or a mirror. And Paprika always shows up like that.
Yeah.
Which is so freaky.
Yeah. And we learn a little bit about Osani. He's handsome, but he's like weird. He's kind of jealous of Chiba. He kind of seems like he has contempt for what's his name? Takita. He's part of their team, but like he's not like, I don't know. You could tell
not like friends.
Yeah. You could tell he's gonna be like a scumbag.
Okay, so Himuru's in the he's in a coma, he's attached to these like machines that are monitoring him.
We go back to the detective. The detective story is weird because thematically it's relevant, but it's almost like its own different thing that's happening. Detective goes, Paprika gives him a card that says, what does it say? Radioclub.jp.
Yeah, so it's like a website. So she gives him a card that has no number or address on it. Just has a website. And on the front of it, it just says Paprika with nothing else.
Right.
So he goes on this website and it turns out to be like a virtual lounge, like a
But,
bar.
right. But she's in there and you see him sitting down talking to her, but you also see him on his laptop, which is interesting because it means that it's not just movies or dreams, media is dreams. Because the fact that he could just log onto a website and then be in that world with Paprika shows that. And she even makes, she's like she says with the dream stuff in the beginning, she says, you know, the internet's a lot like dreams. These are areas where repressed conscious minds come to escape.
Yeah, you know what? It made me think about like online chat spaces, and I think that's what it was getting at. Yeah, where it was very, again, it's like kind of, so we have like different, so they use multiple definitions of dreams in this movie.
Yes,
So
that's true.
we have the literal dream, as in, you know, you're asleep and you're having this experience in your brain. But then we also have dreams as ambitions or goals, which is the detective's whole story. So it's like it's almost like if this was a kind of anthology and the detective would have been on his own little thing with Paprika, which actually would have been cooler if Paprika was a movie, but it was just like different stories with Paprika in it. I feel like that would have been, I mean, not cooler, but I think I would have liked to see that.
The way he intersects with the main story is in the beginning, he's with Paprika, like doing the therapy. And as more and more people succumb to the dream world, more and more victims of the quote unquote terrorists, he begins to investigate the case. So that's really the only way he gets involved with it. But he's got his own thing going on. He's trying to figure out what do his dreams mean? Why does he have this dream of this person being shot from behind? Who is he looking for?
Yeah, so as the person is shot, you see a shadowy figure running behind, like past him, like through an exit door. And the cop is always chasing him, but he never gets to catch the perpetrator. And he does explain that, like, when Paprika and him are looking through at the beginning, like, oh, this is a picture from the homicide case I'm working on that I'm stuck. So it's like he's stuck in his own life. But there's something else going on that's preventing him from moving forward, and he's trying to figure that out.
But he's kind of stuck in his own dream, right? Because it can't really be a real homicide that he's working on. Because we find out later, he finally gets to the other side and sees, and it's him who's shot.
But see, this is where this movie gets really bizarre and complicated. At the end, Paprika tells him, "I heard you solved that homicide case." It's actually one line, and you could totally miss it if you weren't paying attention.
But couldn't
So,
that also mean like, I heard you figured out your subconscious. I heard you fixed your problem.
I think it's twofold. I think he's stuck with this homicide case, but it's also opening up some unresolved issues that he's had. And I think it's not even about the homicide case at all, but that was like a kind of catalyst that started him off. We also mention, and they only mention this like once or twice, which again, with this movie, you can miss a lot, is that how he's connected with Paprika because this device isn't really open to the public yet, is that he was college friends with the
Chief.
chief. So the chief was like, okay, I'm gonna help you, but you can't talk about this.
We also learn that he hates movies. He doesn't like movies. He doesn't want to talk about movies.
Even though his dream is made up of movies.
Basically, hating movies means you're repressing something, right? If movies is your subconscious to say, I hate movies, I don't want to talk about movies. It really means I don't want to talk about whatever is repressed inside of me, right? And like Freud said, right, the repressed always returns. And that's kind of what's happening to him. That's who he's chasing constantly.
Yeah, so it's, oh man. Yeah, so it, so in that sense, then really the double definition of dream is also working on the cop's case because it's he's repressing something, so it's his into his psyche, but then it's also about we later find out that he had ambitions that weren't realized, so it was his dream
To be a filmmaker.
to be a filmmaker that didn't happen.
Okay, since we brought it up, let's skip to this. In the end, we find out he had this friend, and he goes, I don't he had this friend that he made a movie with, and then he forgot the friend, and he's like, how can I forget him? I liked him so much. I admired him. He was always better with the girls with me. And we made this movie together. And basically, the film tells us he had this friend and whatever. But my feeling is that it isn't a friend, it's him. That's like his paprika.
Okay, you know
Because you
what's
also don't ever
wild?
see that guy's face.
You don't.
And you see him reflected at the end. The detective looks, and in the reflection, he sees his so-called friend. So I don't think it is a friend.
Okay, so you're saying it isn't a friend at all, but it's just his younger self.
It's like if Chiba completely tried to repress Paprika.
Okay, that's interesting. I didn't even think about that. Oh wow. Okay. I you know that makes sense. That does. That's good.
Also, I don't know if you know this. At the radio club, the virtual bar, there are two bartenders, and they are voiced by Satoshi Kon, the director, and the writer of the novel.
Oh, no, I didn't know
Which
that.
the fact that it's the two creators is very interesting, because it makes you think, well, maybe they're more than just bartenders. Maybe they're like some kind of overseers or something.
Oh, I kind of took it as like they were Paprika's creations. So it's
Okay.
like because they only exist in the radio club, but later they show up in the dream when the dream has taken over the world.
Yeah.
And then I actually the one thing I noted about them was one of them looks like Oliver Hardy.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
which I was wondering if that was intentional. I think so. But yeah, they could really just be these kind of yeah, could they kind of just swoop in and sort of like save the day. And
Yeah.
it's almost like a, it's like, where were these characters before?
Right.
How did they do that? And where did they end up?
In the big finale, they bring the detective to the parade.
Yeah, that's confusing.
Okay. So, getting back to the plot, more and more people are like going crazy like the chief did, and like trying to kill themselves or falling into comas. So there are more and more victims. So now the detective is trying to investigate it, and he sees Chiba, but he immediately is struck by her, and he can like he doesn't see Paprika, but he can tell she's Paprika. He says to Chief, "Tell me the truth, that's Paprika, right?" And the chief doesn't answer him.
Which is what was he seeing then?
That's a really interesting question. Then the detective has, I guess, a heart attack or a panic attack. He's driving, and then he starts to like hold his chest, and then he starts to like look around, and he sees a bunch of doubles. He sees two kids wearing the same clothes and like these weird images of doubles. And then you find out he's in the hospital. Oh no, he's not in the hospital, he's in a hotel room waiting for Paprika. So I guess, or maybe he well, maybe what we're seeing is him becoming a victim. Like that's what happens. It looks like a heart attack when you get sucked into the dream. I wasn't quite sure how that fit.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was the dream that sucked him in, or it was seeing Chiba and Paprika as like one person.
Yeah.
Kind of like when they and another media thing is when you see your doppelganger or when you
Yeah.
see two of something that doesn't make sense, it like breaks your
Right.
brain a little.
Well, in the essay about Uncanny, the thing that Freud talks about first, the first example he uses is like seeing yourself in the mirror and not realizing it's yourself, which is kind of what's happening with the detective, right? He's
That's
chasing
true.
down what could be himself.
That, yeah, okay. That does make more sense. Oh.
So we're back in the detective's dream, but then we see his dream like on a movie screen, and we see Paprika in the theater like clapping like she's watching it like a movie, and she's eating popcorn. And then we cut away from that, and Tokita and Chiba got into an argument, and he decides to enter Humiro's dream to try to figure out what's going on, because he feels guilty because she's like, people are dying because of what you're doing, and you don't even feel guilty. She kind of like puts a trip on him, and he wants to like do something. So he enters the dream world where he thinks it's Himuro's dream, but it's really just the dream world. Because when they look at Himuro on the monitor, it's just like snow. It looks like a TV with no signal, like as if he doesn't have a subconscious anymore.
Yeah,
And
and then he
yeah.
gets trapped in there.
Yeah. And Takeda Well, maybe a little bit like Paprika. When he's in the dream, he's a robot. He looks like a robot with a monitor head, and it's his face on the monitor.
And it spins like a head and moves its arms. It's actually
Right.
like a toy. I've seen these toys before.
Right. Which kind of shows his immaturity.
Yeah, and he's also obsessed with toys, as we later see, like his whole workspace, similar to Himuru's, is like it's full of toys. And he's always talking about just having fun and just
Yeah.
like, and when he talks about dreams, he talks about it like, which actually I found kind of interesting because this dev he created the device and had teams working on it, but everyone that uses the device has a very different perspective on it.
Yes.
So Takeda's was like, wouldn't it be fun to enter people's into share dreams together, almost like playtime?
Yes.
Chiba uses it as a scientific, like a psychiatric tool,
Yes,
and
yes.
the chairman uses it as a form of control.
Yes, really good point. Yeah. Right. They all see dreams as different.
Yeah, and one thing that Tokita or the chief, I don't remember who said this, but mentioned like the DC Mini actually uses the human body as a battery, like, and that's what powers it. So it's almost like a Matrix reference
Yes,
too.
yeah. Right. But it's also like goes back to like the philosophy of like biopower and like how our bodies are used to like create ideology. We have a weird scene now where we cut back to the theater and it's the detective talking with Paprika, but the detective is dressed like Akira Kurosawa, the famous Japanese director.
Yeah.
And they're talking about cinematic terms like crossing the line of access, the line of what they call what they don't they refer to what I think is the line of action here. And like so they're just talking about like cinematic techniques. And he was the guy who said he hated movies. So it's like I guess his subconscious is sort of coming out.
Yeah, they also talk about pan focus, and he's explaining what's going on the
Right.
screen, which
Right. Right.
I thought that was charming. It was
Yes,
like,
yes.
because even though he said he hates movies, but it's almost like internally he still kind of thinks of himself as like a director or
Right,
something.
he's the persona of a director.
But it's also like you don't usually see the director in the theater, so that also is something funny too. It's like a screener, like they were screening something to talk about
Yes.
it.
Yeah.
He also has a totally different affect than he does the whole movie.
Right,
He's just
right.
like, he's kind of he seems so comfortable and happy.
Yeah. Well, in the end, when he's talking to the reflection of the friend, which I think is himself, the friend says, "You lived out our movie," because you find out that the movie that he made with his friend was a cop movie, and you realize he's living a genre. He's the detective in the detective story.
Right, so it kind of like it doesn't totally matter that he isn't
Yeah.
a director so much as it's really about just coming to terms with yourself.
Yeah. So the parade busts into the movie theater and now is taking over
They
his
bleed,
dream.
but that's cool though, is the way they bust through it is they
Yeah.
actually pour out almost like a liquid all the
Yeah.
characters of the parade, like the frogs, the
Yeah.
Statue of Liberty, the dancing fridge, and the mailbox,
Yeah.
and they out of the projector room. So it's almost like they were coming out of the camera.
Yes.
And
Yeah.
they do that later. They kind of mess with you later when Paprika goes through a TV screen, comes out of the cameraman's
Yeah.
camera. It's so weird and
Yeah.
fun. But yeah, anyway, they pile in, and like it takes them a little bit to notice, and then they all converge, and the parade just bursts the theater and breaks it apart, and then
Yeah.
they're in the parade and they're outside in the city again
Yeah.
with
And
this
they see
pile.
that Takeda, after going into Himiro's dream, is kind of he's lost too. So Paprika decides that she's also gonna go into Himiro's dream and try to save Takeda.
Yeah,
And
he's
she
the
yeah.
robot. So he's just like, he's talking nonsense and
Yeah.
spinning his head around like a
And but
toy.
when Paprika goes into the dream, she's like the She's like a superhero or something. Like she's like flying around like
Oh, I know reference to that. It's actually from a Chinese epic called The Monkey King, and he's almost like a demigod.
Okay.
So yeah, and of course, as Americans, we don't have access to that really, but that he like if you were a Japanese viewer, you would, or any viewer in Asia, you would recognize the
Yeah.
Monkey King.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
Yeah, Paprika becomes the Monkey King and she's like on a cloud and just flying,
Yeah,
following the
yeah.
parade.
Yeah. She's like, how do you put it? She's like, I don't know, like the Dream Warriors in Nightmare on Elm Street. She like has full like control kind of when she's in a dream. She can manipulate things. She's like Neo in a way.
Yeah, there's a lot of Matrix references in this kind of. I mean,
Yeah.
not like literally, but like thematically and kind
Yeah.
of just. Yeah, Paprika's kind of like what do they call lucid dreaming.
Yeah.
It's like she
She's
has
aware of it.
total aware
Yes.
of everything, total control.
Right. She becomes like a fairy at one point and is flying around. She can do all the. There's one weird part where she like disassociates, like she's like being captured, and then she sees herself and she's like, "Run, Paprika," and then she's the other Paprika. Like it's very, very weird. Which again, it's one of those things. Like it wasn't until the second time I saw it that I even noticed that.
That's kind of wild. I mean, this whole movie is just a wild
Yeah.
ride.
Okay, so we're kind of getting to the end of the film now. Chiba, Paprika learn that the chairman is the person behind everything. She goes to his greenhouse, and he starts looks like he's walking, but then we see it's like these tree vines that he's like moving on. And she thought she had woken up, but she's still in a dream because she was with the chief, but then the chief is really the other guy. What's his name? Osani.
Yeah, that was a real mind fuck.
Right.
So you find out they're in the dream, and then the greenhouse just kind of like splits apart and they're in like different versions. Like Paprika, there's a point where I think we are skipping ahead a little bit, but I
Yeah,
thought it
yeah.
was interesting some kind of markers. So when she still thinks it's Himuru's dream.
Yeah.
And they go into like the hat, which again, the hat that was in his apartment, right? So which you theorize like that was never there. So you go through the pa they go through the hatch again, and then she sees this like Greek statue that looks like Caesar, and it's but the head and the face is Osanai.
Yes.
And at first, I was like, is that what Osanai put there, or is that what Himuru put there because he was attracted to him?
Oh, interesting.
And you just kind of see all these like when she's in this room with Osanai, and it's just all these like classical like Renaissance paintings.
Yeah.
And it's like that's his safe space.
Is that where she's pinned down like a butterfly?
Yeah, so she actually becomes like a sphinx or something, and she fights him, but then
Yeah.
he wins, and he pins her down like a butterfly that's being pinned for like study, like in a
Yeah.
glass box. And you see that all the there's all these other butterflies all around the room in the
Yeah.
glass boxes. So it's like again, it's like Osanai's way of controlling something beautiful,
Yeah.
because
And
he
we find out
thinks.
that he's a creep. He wants her. He does something very sexual and creepy, which is he puts his hand through Paprika's crotch, like basically into her vagina, but then it moves up, like all the way up her body, and basically he's ripping her skin off, and you see Chiba inside.
Yeah, he rips Chiba out of Paprika.
Right, because I guess he likes Chiba really more than Paprika.
Oh, okay, that's a good point. But I was also wondering if that was his way of just destroying her power,
Oh,
because
maybe.
Chiba's power is Paprika.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's
And he takes
weird.
her out naked. That's the thing is like
Yes.
when Paprika is pinned on the table, she's wearing Paprika's clothes. But
Yeah.
when he rips Chiba out of her, Chiba's a naked body.
Yeah.
And is kind of like limp.
Yeah.
And through the dialogue, we kind of find out that the chairman was using Osanai because the chairman can't move in certain spaces because he's in a wheelchair, but also uses Osanai to kind of. And here's the thing that I'm not really quite sure. Did he seduce Himuru? Because they use the term like you sold your body, but does that
Yeah.
mean like Himuru paid him to have sex with him, or did that mean that like, he was using his body to use Himuru.
Wow. See, when she said you sold your body, I thought she meant you sold it to the chairman.
I think it had double meaning.
Okay. See, that completely went over my head. I, I'm sure you, yeah. What you're telling me right now is the first time I'm realizing it. That's really interesting.
Yeah, because it kind of it ties into why that brief cut of the pornography of
And
Sanae was
right.
framed in that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also how like he immediately becomes aggressive
Yeah.
when they bring that up. It's like
Yeah,
it's
yeah, yeah.
something bad happened to him. And he is a creep. I'm not saying
Yeah, yeah,
he
yeah.
isn't, but there's something so tragic about that too, which is like he just wants what he wants, but he has to be used by people, so he's used by
Right.
Himuru.
He's like pathetic. Like even while she's captured, Paprika is like insulting him.
Yeah, because it's like she's it's almost like she's not afraid of him. And he just wants to be seen as someone who has power or control. I mean, why else would he picture
Yeah.
himself, or why else would we see him as that Greek god?
Right. And now the chairman shows up, growing out of Osanai's shoulder, like he's a two-headed man. And I guess he was trying to hide her from the chairman, and the chairman's like, "You can't hide anything from me." I guess he just wanted Chiba to himself. I'm not sure why the chairman and him are now fighting in that moment.
So I think they had the same a similar goal. They wanted Chiba, right? Or Paprika. I think Osanai wanted her to sexually, but I think the chairman wanted to get rid of her because she's the only person that could stop him.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay, yeah, that makes
Because
sense.
why else would he, because he put so much effort into fighting her more than anyone else.
Right. Yeah.
And
Okay.
she can go in and out of dreams and has that control of the dream reality that he wants to for himself.
Yeah.
So, and he actually, it ends up like they're fighting and they're also like grotesquely conjoined. It's so creepy.
Yeah.
And then the chairman does something and Osanai explodes in a bunch of butterflies.
Yes. We haven't said yet. What's also happening is the detective is in that movie theater in his dream, and he's watching this all as a movie, and he walks into the movie screen as if he's trying to break through the movie screen into where they are to save Paprika. And like the movie screen is like skin like stretching over him. And then finally it
Latex.
rips and he's in there.
Yeah, that was creepy. It was taking a while for that to happen
Yeah.
too. It was like so slow and just like pushing and
Yeah.
pushing. Oh, it's so weird. Like how they did that as an animated portion, and we'll get to that when we finish the movie, but overall, like the animation is amazing in this movie.
Yeah, it's incredible. There's some CGI elements, I think, helping along.
Yes,
That doesn't take anything
definitely.
away from it, but I'm just saying. So I get okay, so now the parade is like in reality, right? Like the parade's on the street and everybody there's a giant geisha doll, like a Godzilla out on the street. Like now all hell's broken loose. Right, because at one point the giant baby doll like breaks the building and Chief is like falling out. And Chiba grabs him and he's like, she can't hold him. And then Paprika grabs him and they pull him up. And Paprika and Chiba are both there at the same time, coexisting. So, like, all the reality and dreams have completely blurred. And now just dreams are in reality. And like, there are news reporters like reporting about the dream parade and it's just bananas.
It's yeah. Did you notice that before the building was destroyed by that giant doll, the businessmen who were smiling and waving and then jumping off the
Yes.
top of the building, I think that's what the chief and Himuru and those other people were doing. Like they were just imitating that,
Oh,
jumping off.
yeah.
So that was just like kind of the dream is kind of violent too.
Yes.
Yeah, and there was a point where Paprika jumps through a TV, like I said before, and she climbs out of a cameraman's camera,
Right, to get to the, yeah, to get there.
and then you're like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
This makes no, it's like the logic in this movie overall is just very, it makes, there's no logic.
Right. Right.
And you're right, it does break a lot of its own rules.
Yeah.
But there are some interesting things. So like the chief has gotten all powerful and he can control the dream reality.
Not the chief, the chairman.
Sorry, chairman. Yes, the chairman can control dream reality just like Paprika can. And he like I can't remember at what point it was, but he turns into a giant whale and he's trying to eat her, and she's like the Little Mermaid. And then like she becomes Pinocchio. And it's all Disney stuff, but it's not like it doesn't it's not a direct the color screens are different, the clothing is a little off, but it's clearly a reference to Disney. And then the chairman
Well,
kind of
they
becomes
package dreams, don't they?
they
Right? I mean,
do.
that's what Disney does.
That's true. That's a good point too. That's another thing on top of this is like
There's a lot of layers.
a lot of layers. And then the chairman is gigantic, like
He's this
a
giant, like,
Godzilla.
titan. Yeah. And he's, like, all black. Like he's, like, dark for some reason.
And he's all powerful. He's exactly what he wanted. He wanted an able body to be able to control everything. But then like Chiba becomes gigantic, but she's
Well,
naked.
what? Okay, so what happens is Chiba and Paprika start fighting, and Chiba's like, "Why don't you ever listen to me? You're part of me." And Paprika's like, "Have you ever thought maybe you're part of me?" And Paprika's like, "Look, I'm gonna go and confront Chairman. You, if you want to go, because she says she wants to, Chiba wants to save what's his name,
Tokita, the
Akita."
heavyset scientist.
And we learn that she has feelings for him and that she's been repressing those feelings. So she finally says it. She says, like, I, and then Paprika's like, go ahead, say it. And she's like, I love him. So she goes to save, I, what,
Tokita.
yeah. And him as a giant monster eats her. Oh, it's a giant robot eats her. Then, Paprika is fighting with the chairman, and he, like, she, like, gets thrown out, and basically she gets thrown into the robot. So what happens now is Paprika and Chiba inside of the robot, inside of him, they merge and become one, and they become like this giant baby, and then the baby sucks up the dream world, and every time it like s drinks in more of the dream world, it grows larger, more an adult, and then eventually it's a giant adult the same size as the chairman. Also naked, but looks more like Paprika, but has long black hair, and you realize it's both of them together. And she like eats the chairman. She like sucks him up, and the dream world goes away. And I think Chiba's gone. I think Chiba as a corporeal being is gone. I think what happens now is in the dream world, Paprika and Tokita live as a couple. Or because they, she says at the end, she writes a letter to, she leaves a letter at the virtual bar to the detective, and she says Chiba's changing her last name to Tokita, meaning she's getting married. But how can Chiba, oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, that's the thing with this movie is like you don't know where what's going on, where it ends.
Right. You know, after the end and everybody's saved, you see the chief, you see the detective, but you never see Tokita again, and you never see Paprika or Chiba again. So I don't know if they're alive or existing somewhere else now.
I didn't think about that. That's a good point. I just kind of just took it as whatever, like surface level. They get their happy ending, and now the chief gets hit. Sorry, the detective gets his happy ending. Yeah, but that's a point. It's like, did they move into reality together? Did they just stay in a dream world together? I don't know.
Because that's kind of what he wanted always, right? Because he was this big child, this big immature child. So he liked the idea of living in a dream is something that he would want. And Chiba was repressing the part of her that could love, which was Paprika. So it's like she, it, I think that's what happens with Chiba is the same that happens with the detective, which is I think that they split themselves off from a part of them, and that's how they become two. And she, that sort of break is sutured, and now she's a full person again. I think, I don't know. It ends in a
Interesting.
weird way where, so she leaves it, the policeman or the detective goes into the virtual bar through his laptop, and they're like, oh, there's a letter for you from Paprika. And that's what she tells him, that she's getting married, whatever. And then she says, P.S., I saw this good movie called Dreaming Kids. And she's like, Dreaming Kids is good. So then you see him go to a movie theater and you see posters for Tokyo Godfathers and Perfect Blue. You see all of Satoshi Kon's movies. And Dreaming Kids was going to be the movie he made after this, which he never got to make.
Was there ever like any information about it or like any...
In one of the video essays I saw, I think I saw some artwork, some like early development work for it.
Oh, okay.
Well, the very last thing that happens is the detective buys a ticket to a movie. So the first thing that happens is a clown gets out and says, it's showtime. And then the very last thing is the detective in the railroad buying a ticket to a movie. And that's Paprika.
So we spent a lot of time, which is, you know, it's not a bad thing, but like really just trying to figure out what the plot is.
Yeah.
And breaking that down and what do things mean. What was your favorite part visually? Or part of this movie that really stuck out at you?
I really did like the Dream Parade. It is menacing, but I don't think I would mind being a part of it. You know, the dream world was so lush. You know, like there was a real difference between the real world and the dream world. Not as like stark as in the Matrix, where it's like all blue and all green. But like the dream world is clearly more like Paprika is, you know, she's got like red hair and she's bright colors. And then like Chiba is not, like, that's sort of what you see. But, you know, I mean, in general, Satoshi Kon, it's good art. I mean, it's really good looking anime. What was your favorite image or part?
I mean, I really just love it as kind of just an animated piece. Like it really is a devotion, or, you know, like, just in a love for movies and moving images.
Yeah.
I kind of love when Paprika's in the dream world and she like just touches the kind of air and then the scene breaks like glass and she walks through it. Like that was really, I feel like it took things like what we expect from an anime movie and really turned it on its head.
I think Inception completely stole that image.
Inception stole a lot of things, especially I think, Was it Leonardo DiCaprio that was the star in that?
Yes.
When he's running down the hallway?
Yeah, and like the hallway starts getting all wobbly.
And melts and he just falls in.
Yeah,
that's directly from this movie. I'll be honest, I didn't like Inception when I first saw it because I felt like it was a movie trying to be smarter than it was.
Yes. There was a good 20 years where American filmmakers could just steal from Japanese artists and kind of get away with it.
Yeah, you can't really do that anymore.
Yeah, well, anime, I think in the streaming era, anime's gotten bigger in the West than it's ever been.
I agree with that. I think it's a good thing. I think in general, audiences really need just kind of something to kind of challenge you as a viewer. I feel like that's what I like about watching foreign films, is because a lot of the expectation is for an audience that you don't have, that we don't have that context for.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's something important. I think what Satoshi Kon was doing with Dreams that have been layered throughout his career, I think it's just something that we don't really see.
Yeah.
I think, you know, in when we did Perfect Blue, you talked about how it was so obvious who the villain was. And I would say, in this sense, it's the same thing. He looks like a fucking fish.
Yeah. It got me though. I didn't guess the chairman.
He just looked awful and he looked evil. He kind of looked just...
Well, for sure. But I didn't think he was going to be the big bad. But,
okay.
You did?
I did, yeah.
Or ahead of me. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, it's a shame that this filmmaker died so young, because who knows where he would have went. There's a lot of stuff to do, you know?
I mean, I think just, and of course this isn't just the filmmaker himself, but the animation from Perfect Blue to now has totally jumped. Like, it really went places where I would say this is like a great successor to that, because it really shows his growth as a director.
Yeah.
And I would have loved to see his career go forward. Like, what else would he have done?
Right. What was this movie called? Dream Kids or Dreaming Kids? What was that going to be?
I know. And, you know, when you look it up, they kind of, in I just Googled it when you said it, and it says like the change, they actually changed the title to Dreaming Machines, and they actually storyboarded the movie and animated some of it, and then it just, because he died, it got canceled. So there is some of this movie probably sitting somewhere on someone's hard drive or something that we'll never get to see.
Well, he did do, I maybe it was after this, he did some short film. I forget what it's called. It's about like someone waking up or something.
Oh, I don't know.
It's like a short.
Oh, it was it part of the anthology series?
Possibly, I don't
Because
know.
there's an anthology movie called Memories, but that came out in 95. So that was
No, this would be later. I think after. Let me see. Let me see if I could find it. No, I can't find it.
Well, it's all right. I mean, we'll find it later, but it, huh. Yeah, because, and also because we're in America, when we have access to things, it's going to be later than when they came out. I actually thought his series, Paranoia Agent, came out after Paprika, but it didn't. But it follows a lot of the same themes of like media and what's real and what's not. He has the similar themes. He just kind of like approaches it from a different way in each of his stuff. And I never watched Tokyo Godfather, so I have no idea what that's about.
I want to watch it though. Neither have I. I want to watch it. So you've seen what? Just this in Perfect Blue or anything else?
I saw Perfect Blue, Paprika. I have seen Millennium Actress, and I do like it a lot.
What's your favorite of his?
See, that's tough because now it used to be Paprika. But now that, we did it for the podcast, because I was really, writing things down to break it apart, I feel like a lot of the inconsistencies and the, breaking its own rules kind of bothers me as someone who
Well,
like
I think it's on
amateur.
purpose, though. I think
Oh, yeah.
I think you're meant to watch it a second time and go, wait a minute, how is Paprika in the real world here?
Yeah, I don't think, I definitely, I mean, we'll never know what his intentions are, but I can just glean that he does not care if things make sense to you. As a director, it's more about this kind of mood and just sort of, the visual effects. It's really hard because I feel like I've only watched Perfect Blue once. I've seen Paprika like three, four, five times. I saw Millennium Actress twice and I loved it. So I can't say I have something that's my favorite. And I know you've only seen two of his stuff so far, but what do you think?
I think I like Perfect Blue a little bit more, just because this is 2006 and it has a little bit of that early CGI assist kind of stuff, and Perfect Blue is the 90s and it really feels handmade.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of like a filmmaker or any artist who their whole career is reworking, is answering the same questions. They just keep reworking the same idea.
Right.
I think that's cool because in some ways an artist is always doing that. So just lean into it. You know what I mean?
That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. I think Perfect Blue is, if we're just thinking about that, it's kind of like the stronger film in that regard, where it's just the plot wise and like having a tighter movie in that sense.
For sure.
Oh, wow. Tokyo Godfather is available on a bunch of platforms for free.
Yeah, I
So
gotta watch
one
that.
thing I feel like I just want to watch everything Satoshi Kon did and just really think about his body of work. I did watch Paranoia Agent back when Adult Swim used to do anime at like midnight. And I watched that whole, I think it's only a few episodes. Like it was like a more like a mini series than anything. And I watched it all like as a young, like I think a teenager, just watching it at like 12, 1 a.m. just to see where this was going. But I wonder what it would be like to see it as an adult now, because now I'm in my 30s. Totally different. And now I know who Satoshi Kon is. I didn't know who he was when I was watching this. I was just like, this is so weird. And it's a mystery too. So the premise is like someone gets, like a woman gets attacked by what the media calls a little slugger. So he's like a kid that's probably around 12 years old, wearing like a hat and a golden baseball bat, and people just are like getting a tattoo. Who's like a serial, like, I don't know, assault. I don't know what you call that, like assailant. Okay, so he's like an assailant, and then it's all this media frenzy to try to follow the story, and it's like the obsession with this story.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it ties to the similar kind of like what's real, what's not, what the media, how people react to media, and how media react, has an effect on people.
Interesting.
Yeah. It seems like Tokyo Godfathers is like an outliner, because it's not really about media. It's about three homeless people that find a baby.
Yeah.
Which is like, where, that's really different.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I feel like I understand it. Look, the goal is not understanding. The goal is to enjoy an experience. But I do feel like I understand the film a little more talking to you about it. I enjoy talking to you about anime films. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Mike. This was great.
All right, everybody. This is PCMC. We come out every Wednesday. We're here to talk about all the nerdy shit. We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.